You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. The election to choose LA's next mayor is coming up in just a few months in November, and the city's huge homelessness crisis tops the list of concerns for voters. That's according to a recent LA Times UC Berkeley poll. More than 41,000 people live unhoused in the city of Los Angeles by the last count.
I cleared all this stuff out. I planted all the sunflowers. And
you planted these flowers?
I planted everything here, the Christmas tree, the two palm trees.
On a well-tended patch of grass beside the 110 freeway, C.C. Smith recently spoke to KCRW reporter Anna Scott. Smith is one of L.A.'s unhoused residents.
And these are my dogs here, Rocco and Papa.
Smith says she's not really following the race between U.S. Representative Karen Bass and billionaire real estate developer Rick Caruso to become L.A.'s next mayor. She doesn't think either one of them will help her move off the street.
To me, they all lie. They all get up there and make false promises.
Even the current mayor, Eric Garcetti, told KCRW last month that the big promises Bass and Caruso are both making to move thousands of people indoors quickly, if elected, are unrealistic. Well, today, Anna Scott, that reporter who covers homelessness for us here at KCRW, is following up to look in more detail at those promises and how voters are making sense of them. Anna is with us right now. Hi.
Hi.
All right. So as different as Bass and Caruso seem, there is overlap in what they say, right? That they're going to do about the unhoused crisis. They're both promising to bring thousands of people indoors, even in their first year in office, whomever wins, right? How?
Yes, that's exactly right. So Bass and Caruso present very differently as candidates. Bass is a Congress member, a longtime Democrat who once headed a social justice nonprofit and also worked in healthcare. Caruso, as you mentioned just a minute ago, is a billionaire real estate developer, best known, of course, for The Grove and the Americana here in LA, and a one-time Republican who registered as a Democrat less than a year ago. But there is a lot of overlap in their proposals on alleviating homelessness, starting with the biggest promises that they're making. Caruso says that if he's elected, he will open 30,000 new shelter beds during his first year in office, which is about double the number of beds that the city has right now. So that's a big promise.
Ambitious, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Bass, meanwhile, says that if she's elected, she will move 15,000 people indoors, either to shelter or to permanent housing during her first year in office.
It's easy to say, but doing it is a different thing. So in other words, they're saying, elect me, I'm going to make a visible dent in this crisis immediately, right?
Yes, exactly, which is what a lot of voters really want to hear. But, you know, we spoke last month to LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. He said those promises are not very realistic. And so I wanted to go one by one and take a closer look at what they're each saying and how they're saying they're going to get it done. So Garcetti told us Caruso's plan for 30,000 shelter beds could cost something like $800 million, which LA does not have. And I recently sat down with Caruso and asked him how he would pay for those beds.
So you have the federal government that is issuing more money than it's ever issued in the history of the United States, and we're going to tap into that and get our fair share. We have the state of California that has more money than it's ever had in the history of the state of California. Governor Newsom has been very clear that solving the homeless problem is a top priority of his, and we're going to get our fair share from there. And we're going to take a look at our $11 billion budget and reset priorities of what services need to be given to the residents of Los Angeles to make sure we're taking care of our residents and using our taxpayer dollars well.
I asked him if he has any idea where he might cut the city budget to find money for those beds.
I do. I don't want to get into the details of that. And I think really, in honest, it starts with doing a very deep forensic audit.
All right. Not very specific there, right? I mean, but maybe the federal government, maybe the state, but not any particular pot of money identified. And some rearranging, it sounds like, of the city budget. Where would these shelters even go?
Yeah, that's another question that I had. And Caruso says they would go everywhere. They would go all over the city, largely on city-owned surplus land, which also seems like a stretch. It is likely there would be pushback in some neighborhoods to putting shelters everywhere throughout Los Angeles. And not to mention maybe some pushback from city council members who have a lot of control over their districts and what goes in their districts. But To be fair, this is a campaign, right? And campaigning, it is all about making big promises. And what Crusoe is really saying without directly saying it is that his priority is clearing encampments off of sidewalks and setting up enough shelter beds to legally enforce anti-camping laws. He says he would like to do that without arresting people or criminalizing poverty, but he's talking to voters who are fed up by the crisis and the situation on the streets. And, you know, he does have other proposals related to homelessness that he doesn't talk about much on the campaign trail, but that I think are interesting.
What proposals?
Well, one reason we're in this crisis is LA has a huge lack of affordable housing. And Crusoe says he'll make it easier to build low-income housing in the city, for example, by cutting red tape and also by making it harder to file lawsuits challenging new developments, which is something interesting. But his main argument, his main selling point on this issue, more than any particular policy idea, is that he is a can-do businessman. He's outside the political system that so far has failed to solve homelessness.
And with all due respect, the mayor is a product of that system. Congresswoman Bass is a product of that system. So, of course, when you're in that system and a product of it, you're not going to be able to find solutions outside that system.
He's aiming for Karen Bass, right? So what does Karen Bass have to say about that?
Well, here she is responding to that remark.
It is true. He is outside of the system and has spent a lot of time building luxury housing. So why has he not built one unit of affordable housing?
So she's putting it back on him. Now, in terms of her own big promises on homelessness, she's saying that she's going to house or shelter 15,000 people during her first year as mayor if she's elected.
The bottom line is that we have to do it. 2,000 people died on the streets last year. 1,500 died the year before that. It is not acceptable to me to continue at the speed in which we've been continuing. It just isn't. And so I'm trying to work on a lot of the issues now, especially since I'm in DC for the next few months, that there are a lot of regulations that need to be changed.
She says that the things she's working on changing are rules that would make it easier if changed for low-income people with rental vouchers to use them, for example. But like with Crusoe's plan, it's not clear exactly where the funding would come from for her big promise, the 15,000 number, other than generally asking for federal and state assistance. She is, like Crusoe, also promising to make it easier to build affordable housing in Los Angeles and expand existing programs. Like there's one where the city buys motels, for example, and turns them into homeless housing. But Bass's big selling point, just like Crusoe, is really more about personality and background than it is about policy. It's about her image as somebody who has the relationships to bring in help from other levels of government and as somebody who cares deeply about solving homelessness.
I do believe that I can make a dent, and I'm not going to accept that I can't. And people in the city and the county have essentially over these years worked to address and reduce the problem, but not with the fortitude of this has got to end.
So, Anna Scott, what have you heard from voters about how they're deciding who to vote for?
Well, it is these big selling points, I think, that are mostly trickling down to voters. One person I spoke to is Natalie Seaman. She lives in Mount Washington. And just like everybody I've talked to, her top concerns include homelessness and housing affordability, even though she is doing quite well.
30 years ago, I bought my house for $150,000 as a single woman. People have to be able to do that.
Which we know they cannot. She plans to vote for Karen Bass, but not based on any specific policy ideas that Bass has put forward on the campaign trail.
You know, she's being very kind of middle of the road right now, but I look at her values and her background, and those are things that are going to drive my vote.
At the same time, Crusoe's supporters are just as confident in his values and his background that he is the person for the job. One of those supporters is Ronald Estrada. He lives in the Elysian Heights area, and he has the same concerns about homelessness.
I think a new perspective, different eyes, newer ideas, and more transparency.
And do you have more faith in somebody who's not part of the existing political system to fix it?
At this time, I do.
So it's the big picture selling points, who the candidates are as people, that seems to be filtering down to most voters, who, by the way, in California, most voters are more likely to be the homeowners rather than the unhoused, right? I mean, even though unhoused people are the ones at the center of this crisis here in L.A.
Yeah. And some unhoused people like Cece Smith, who we heard from at the very beginning of this conversation, are uneasy about the promises that Crusoe and Bass are making around homelessness. When Cece Smith hears Crusoe's promise to open 30,000 shelter beds, for example, and end street camping, she hears it as a threat.
You cannot put somebody in jail because they don't have a place to live.
And when it comes to Bass, given how scarce LA's housing and shelter options are, Smith is just as skeptical about her promise to move 15,000 people indoors.
I would love for her to come and talk to me. I would really, really love for her to come and talk to me. Talk to one of us face-to-face, one-on-one conversation. I would love to have that conversation. I would do cartwheels if she would.
That sounds like one common thread that we've heard from everyone today is that the current system just isn't working, regardless.
Yeah, it seems like that's the thing everyone agrees on.
And a lot of promises to go forward with. All right, KCRW's Anna Scott, who covers homelessness and housing. Anna, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, coming up, plans are great for mayoral campaigns if they come true as promised. But sometimes promised plans don't come true or take a long time or wind up very different than advertised. The Great Park in OC, can it be what it was supposed to be? That's coming up on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. There are hundreds of acres of parkland that were finally approved for development plans for the first time in years down in Orange County. For close to two decades, the city of Irvine and developers of OC's Great Park have operated on two different speeds, slow and slower. But last month, members of the Irvine City Council voted to ramp things up with yet another primary plan that includes all kinds of things inside the park. Museums, a library, a botanical garden, maybe even a veteran cemetery. We'll talk about that in a moment. Is it still pie in the sky near the El Toro Y? Or is this latest plan, like others, destined for dust? Gustavo Arellano is a columnist for the LA Times, one of our regulars, of course, here at Greater LA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
It's been on the drawing board. You and I have been talking about it.
Oy vey.
On the OC line, for how long have we talked about the Great Park, my friend? 17 years it's been on the drawing board. So there are some attractions there right now. What is there if we were to go to the Great Park today?
Probably the most notorious one is a giant balloon that's, an orange. Like an orange, it takes you up very slow. It takes you and pretty high up. You can see all of Orange County, then down. But there's also been a lot of stuff there built over the past, really in the past decade. So you have big ice skate rinks run by the Anaheim Ducks. You have Wild Rivers, the legendary water park that had been torn down and then just a smaller one just opened up this summer. You have a small amphitheater. You also have a really good farmer's market that's about, what is it, every Sunday morning, a good farmer's market. So just a couple of things here and there, but nowhere near what was promised to Orange County voters all the way back in 2000.
Let's talk a little bit about what's in the new plan. Seems as ambitious, maybe more ambitious as before. Is there a sticking point to getting this part of it done? And what's included in this new plan?
So this actually is nowhere near what the original plan was. Again, the original plan was supposed to be like, oh gosh, a nature wilderness. This is pretty straightforward. Like, you get a library, you get some museums. Okay, you get a lake, you get an amphitheater to, I don't know how big this one is. I think it would be probably more like the Greek Theater than the late great Irvine Meadows, which was more like the Hollywood Bowl. But again, it's more amenities for the public than trying to create this grandiose Golden Gate Park or anything like that. So I think with something like that, it's going to be easier to build, but you have a big sticking point in what's going to move forward, and that's arguably the godfather of the Great Park, a longtime Irvine politician, former mayor, current council member Larry Agron.
Well, let's talk about Larry Agron, and let's talk about this veteran cemetery. This, as you know, there's been a controversy for so long about where this veteran cemetery is going to go. It was in one, like a strawberry field not too far away, and then they said, no, let's put it in the Great Park, and it's, I think, still planned to go in there. But talk about all of that and how Larry Agron factors into that.
So Larry Agron was the political genius, let's call it what it was, who turned the El Toro Marine Corps base, convinced voters to make it into a great park instead of an international airport the way it was planned to. He also had the big, huge ideas, but then it just got mired in everything that I talked about earlier. But he also understood that, hey, this was, you know, this was where so many Americans went through, so many Orange Countyans went through. So Orange County never had a veteran cemetery until recently. So he argued this should be a place where you have a veteran cemetery, maybe not as big as the one in Westwood. So in 2020, he spearheaded a successful city measure that would require that part of the Great Park be a veterans memorial garden and a cemetery. But again, Irvine being Irvine, you don't want a cemetery there. It's going to put down housing prices. So Five Point pushed against it a lot, got the rest of Orange County, all the other politicians to say, you know what, let's not have a veteran cemetery at the Great Park. Let's have it all the way up in Anaheim Hills. So what Larry Agron is saying now is like, no, look, the voters voted for a cemetery of some sort in the Great Park. If it's not built there, it's an easy lawsuit, and that's just going to hinder construction more of the Great Park for years.
If you were a betting man, and I know you're not, but if you were, if you were a betting man, what would you say that all of this gets done? That in our lifetimes, and you know, you're a whippersnapper, I'm a little older. Do you think this gets done in our lifetimes?
Piece by piece, yes, but the entirety of the Great Park, it's not going to be done for decades, especially if there is going to be a lawsuit. And again, Larry really believes in this. And I also agree with him that there should have been a veteran cemetery component to this because, again, this is sacred ground. So there's going to be a lawsuit. That's going to slow it down. But something like an amphitheater, it's all going to be amenities to Irvine. But it's going to, and now you have a city council that's totally for it. And like, there's no more of the battles that they were for so long. Larry's just a lone holdout. And I understand a lot of it, he sees of this as his legacy. And darned if he's going to allow these whippersnappers on the city council to mess with it.
And how different will it look to the original plan from, what was it, 2005?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a bunch of museums, like an amphitheater. Come on, there was not supposed to be a Wild Rivers in the Great Park. Does Central Park have a Wild Rivers? I think not.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist at the LA Times every week. He's here with us for KCRW's Orange County Line. Thanks, Gustavo.
Gracias.
It's Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Finally today, it was a big day for thousands of children, students all across Los Angeles who made their way back to LAUSD classrooms for the first day of school. And with the new school year comes new start times for middle and high schools, as well as changes to COVID protocols. It's Cynthia Blewett's daughter's first day at Crenshaw High School, entering ninth grade. She's a freshman. Her daughter still wears a mask. Of the new dialed back protocols, here's what she had to say.
I'm still kind of skeptical a little bit, but I feel comfortable.
Betty Morano's child attends Madison Elementary School in Southgate. She worries about the lack of weekly COVID testing.
How are we going to know if somebody is sick or not? Mm-hmm. And then the kids are going to go home and maybe the grandparents could be exposed to it.
So just a couple of parents who have children at LAUSD. We're also going to talk about the first day of school and what it means to Heidi Kalin, whose son Kid started eighth grade today at Larchmont Charter School. Heidi, welcome to you.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve.
So tell us a little bit about what the first day of school looked like in your house.
Well, having a teenager, of course, the whole getting out of bed process can be a daily challenge, but this is a new school for kid. So he was pretty excited to get started, and he actually admitted to me 2 weeks ago, "Mom, I think I'm ready to go back. I need some structure."
So, yeah. Don't we all, kid? Don't we all? Wow. And, you know, the middle schools, you mentioned, you know, getting up is always a challenge. It is for me, too, by the way, even way older than kid. How did you feel about all that? And how does kid feel about it?
You know, I mean, he's always been a really good sport. You know, I've had nieces and nephews that have been just, I mean, talk about, you know, dragging them out of bed. But you know what? He knows what he's got to do to get it done. And he's pretty mature. So, yeah, it's pretty low maintenance, I've got to admit.
All right, that's good. You did hear the parents that we spoke to who were pretty concerned that schools weren't going to be, you know, doing these weekly COVID tests, that some of the COVID protocols have been relaxed a little bit. Is that something that you worry about?
You know, I may be a bit more relaxed. I'm willing to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I mean, LAUSD, let's face it, is the second largest public school system in the nation. And my guess is they've done their research. And so I'm going to trust them on this. And you know what? I mean, a mother and I actually kind of joked about, oh, no weekly tests this year. We'll see how long that lasts, you know, but we will see how long that lasts. If there's a spike, a little uptick, okay, great. You know, they'll handle it. If it's a major uptick, we might have to go back to the weekly test. But for now, I'm okay with writing it out and trusting the administration.
I feel like, you know, the first day of school, there's always, and you mentioned your son, kid, saying, you know, "I'm ready for some structure. It's time to go back, Mom."
Right.
What are you hoping for with this new year, you know, with these new start times and even a new school, a new middle school for your son?
The one thing that I'm so psyched about is, you know, I think at charter schools, at public schools, at private schools, everybody typically asks for parent involvement. There's always fundraising to be done, that kind of thing, margins to be met. But there's also lots more events now for the kids. There's going to be sports programs. Parents will be allowed back on campus. I mean, in the 3 years that my son was at his previous middle school, I was on that campus 2 times. And you're talking to a super involved parent. So I'm looking forward to that. I think the kids are really excited about the normalcy, you know, whatever that is now, whatever that looks like.
Certainly hasn't been that way the past couple of years, and we're hoping, keeping fingers crossed on that one. Heidi Kalin, whose son Kid Kalin started 8th grade today. Congratulations. Thanks for sharing a little about your day with us, Heidi.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
That's all the time we have for this evening. Tomorrow, a dwindling water supply is making a lot of folks nervous across Greater LA. Finding solutions to a crisis decades in the making. That's tomorrow on Greater LA. Check out the website anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Share your thoughts with us. Maybe you have a story idea. And of course, you can grab the podcast too at kcrw.com/Greater LA. You can get the Greater LA podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, and Holly Adams all made this evening's episode happen. I'm Steve Chiotakis, thanking you for your time and your ears. Have a great night.